We are amazing because our passion is limitless and our drive is intense. Therefore, you will not deny our grind. You are now listening to the Faith Grind Inspire podcast with your host, Gene Alert.
Welcome back to another episode of Faith Grind Inspire. I am your host, Gene Alert, and today we have a special guest, an entrepreneur, and his name is Ani Sanyo, right? And yo, let me tell you something. My boy right here, I saw him on social media, right? So it's interesting that, you know, we've never met before, but it's how social media connects people, right? But you had a post, and we're going to get to the post, but you had a post that caught my attention, right? And I was like, yo, I got it. And because I'm an immigrant, you know what I'm saying? Like, not only is my parents immigrants, but I'm an immigrant. Like, you, that post was like something that, like, everybody, all immigrants, no matter the color, stand up and be like, you know what I mean?
So appreciate that, man.
I appreciate you and your boys, and I love the energy that you guys had when you guys posted it.
Thank you.
I looked at some of the videos of the hashtags or whatever. And but anyway, so welcome to the show, and welcome to Faith Grind Inspire Show, and tell the people, like, where you from?
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me. Mm-hmm. Definitely an honor to share my story always. I'm a first-generation immigrant kid. My parents moved from India. I was conceived in India and born in the U.S., so I got, you know, my passport situation is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in the Boston area, so I spent my first 18 years out there, and Boston in, like, the 90s was not cracking. Like, there was just nothing happening that I wanted to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, getting to New York was, like, always at the top of my mind, you know, since I was, like, a teenager. I used school as an excuse to get here. Mm-hmm. You know, I told my parents, like, okay, let me go to school. I'm going to figure it out once I get to New York. And I kept my part of the bargain. You know, I've been here now for, like, 12 years in New York City. And, yeah, I feel like, you know, it's when people ask me where I come from, it's funny because I come from a certain place. But, you know, my family and the tradition and the narrative mm-hmm. comes from so many places. So, you
so
know.
Now... growing up in an Indian household, right? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So growing up in an Indian household, like, how was that growing up, right? Because I come from a Haitian household.
Right.
So, like,
I want to say the similarities,
like,
though.
Similarities.
Yeah, I want to say it's more similar.
I had a lot of friends that from that culture, but I never really asked them that question. So
yeah.
I want to know.
That's funny. To be honest, like, my parents are very, like, atypical, meaning they're not traditional, like, in the sense that you hear, you know, in, like, pop culture, whatever, like, there was no pressure to be a doctor or a lawyer. You know, like, they didn't have that, which I'm super grateful for. You know, looking back on it now, I'm like, wow. You know, not to say that they were easy or, you know, that they didn't beat my ass, but
yeah.
they, I think, always trusted their kids to mm-hmm. make the right decision. And I think my brother and I, you know, honored them in that way. But, I mean, growing up, you know, in that kind of a household, there's a lot of emphasis on family, obviously.
Okay, family.
You know, very close-knit. Ultimately, like, my family... we don't have any other family in this country. So, you know, we're all we got, literally.
Oh, seriously?
You know, yeah, so it's important for us to...
So it's just your parents and your brother.
And myself, and that's it.
That's it,
yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, we have to figure everything out for ourselves. And there's a certain, like, closeness that comes with that. You know, just all the ups and the downs that come with that. So I would say we're definitely close-knit. A lot of emphasis on, you know, like, tradition and food and, you know, being generous. I think those are the kind of... values that were instilled in us. My pops is he's just like the hardest working person I ever, you know, ever met, and he set the bar very early, you know. So I tell people, like, I don't have no idols, you know, like, I don't idolize anybody except my pops. And, you know, Jay-Z is a distant second, but, like, you know, it's really just my pops.
Yeah.
And,
was he an entrepreneur?
He wasn't. So it's funny because my pops is very, like, risk averse in a sense.
Uh-huh.
And it makes sense. He came to this country with, you know, $200 and
yeah.
had a family and had to figure it out. So I always give him a hard time, like, yo, you should have taken more risks. Or I always remind him, like, don't put your fear on me, right? Because you did it so that I could take certain risks. And so
mm-hmm.
we have that conversation all the time. But no, he's not. He's a math and data guy.
Okay.
So, you know, my childhood was marred with a lot of, like, financial insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And so my kind of, like, origin story for entrepreneurship was I used to see my father get laid off, like, every year,
mm-hmm.
you know, right before the holidays. And it just messed with me because it was this thing that it was like somebody in some office somewhere would just sign a slip. And the next thing you know, my whole family you know, is in shambles.
Mm-hmm.
And this just happened so many times that for me, I knew that I couldn't leave my future, my family's future, up to somebody else.
In the office.
Yeah.
Right, a flip.
Or just, you know, like to have somebody else have control over, yeah, you know, my health and well-being. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that early on, like I'm talking about like 10, 12 years old, I was like, okay, nah, whatever it is, I'm gonna figure it out, whether it's a lemonade stand or, mm-hmm, you know, whether it was something else.
So that's how you were, that's where like the entrepreneur bug just hit you.
Yeah.
You know, just seeing that 10 years old.
Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. So in your school, like, what did you do? Like, what did you do to, you know, once that bug hit,
yeah,
you, what happened?
Every random hustle possible, man. I literally used to sell lemonade. Obviously, like, back then we used to burn CDs,
yep,
and sell mixtapes.
Uh-huh.
Definitely did all that. What else did we used to do?
Yeah,
I used to rap. That was my big thing in high,
uh-huh,
school and even beyond high school. And I used to rap to the point where, like, later on I went on tour with Wiz Khalifa and Lupe Fiasco and all this stuff. But in high school, we used to record these little demos, and we used to have these, like, concerts, little shows during lunchtime. And we would charge people, and we would sell CDs, and that was, like, my hustle.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, people always knew me to be in something.
So this was in Boston?
Yeah, this is, I was, like, what, 16? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you were in the city of Boston, or like?
No, I was outside. Yeah,
like Randolph.
Not the other side. Yeah, yeah, but like my really close friends are from Randolph.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
That whole area.
I used to spend summers in Randolph.
Oh, like, for real?
Yeah, I used to take out of nowhere. I was just like, you know, my aunt and
there's
my
a lot of Haitians,
Sandy,
in Boston.
Yeah,
yeah,
a lot. You know,
a lot of Cape Verdes, mm-hmm, a lot of Haitians.
Yeah,
for sure.
So, so I was out there all the time.
That's,
you know,
cool,
that,
yeah,
was like my getaway. So okay. So you used to sell mixtapes, you used to rap, you got into that. You know, it's interesting, man. I used to sell mixtapes in school too, but I wasn't rapping.
Right.
You know, I never wanted to be on that side. I wanted to be on the business side of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's so interesting now I'm thinking about it. I was too shy. Like, I was too shy. I'd rather talk, but I didn't want you to judge me.
Interesting.
So I didn't want you to be like, yo, you can't rap better than this kid. And
that's,
I, you know, because,
yeah,
I'm so competitive.
Likewise.
Then I was just like, yo, I don't even want, because it wasn't a passion of mine. That's why.
Yeah.
If it was like really, I was passionate about it.
For sure.
You know, like growing up, who's your favorite rapper?
Jay-Z.
Jay-Z?
All time.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it was like I had
Who's your top five?
In no order.
No order.
No,
yeah,
order, because I can't do that. Jay-Z,
uh-huh,
Big, Mos Def.
Okay.
Man. I'm going to put Big Pun in there, because,
okay,
he really was that nice. And my fifth, I feel like I'm missing crazy people.
What about Fab?
Nah.
No?
Nah.
Oh, man. Yo, Fab is the...
You from Brooklyn?
I'm from Brooklyn.
Yeah, I see that. I see why. I don't know who would be my fifth. Maybe like, Fonte.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
Yeah.
All right. I see that. I respect it.
So I was like, I grew up in like 90s hip-hop. Mobb,
mm-hmm,
Deep, Jay-Z, Nas,
yeah,
all that. And then for me... like the Talib Kweli, the Mos Def, the Native Tongues,
mm-hmm,
Tribe Called Quest, that,
yep,
whole era, that just really like captured me, because, you know, I hadn't seen successful people of color telling their story and creating something before that, and to me I was like, oh, okay, that might be a lane for me. Obviously it was very different, but yeah, that was like, those are some of my first inspirations.
Yeah, that's what's up. So okay, so how did you convince, how was that, because you're the oldest son?
Oldest son.
How did you convince your parents? So did you get a full scholarship to come to school in New York? Or
I didn't, but I paid damn near half my way through regardless.
How did you, yeah, how did you convince them?
I think it goes back to,
what's that conversation,
yeah,
like, man?
My parents did not, my dad was like, nah, because he already knew, they knew like what I was into, you,
yeah,
know, they knew what I was trying to do, and you know, I think again, like I'm just grateful that they trusted me. I wasn't a great student. I was good. Like, I was above average, but I, mm-hmm, definitely wasn't, like, school used to drive me nuts. Cause I was trying to make, like, money. Like, just not to,
yeah,
make money, to spend money, but just,
yeah,
to figure out how to make money.
How to make,
cause
money,
if you,
yeah,
don't figure that out, you know, like, the unfortunate thing about America is, like, you could be white, black, green, or purple, but if you're poor, it's a different experience,
yeah,
you,
no,
know?
It totally is.
Yeah, and I learned that early, and I just knew it was, like, the last thing I wanted to do was be poor in America. And so for me, I was like, how do I crack that code? And so I told my parents I was going to study finance and business at NYU. And I kept most of that promise. Mm-hmm. You know, like I graduated.
From NYU.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I spent about a solid 40% of my time, like while I was in school, like outside of school, outside the state. Like I was touring, I was traveling, I was doing a bunch of things. That looking back, like I don't, you know, I had to do it at that time. Like we were getting flown out to go perform in Florida and things like that on a weekend.
And this is as a rapper.
Yeah, as an artist, yeah. And I would come back and try to like pass an exam on Monday, and that never went well. You know what I mean? But yeah. Like for me, I was always like trying to get the experience. So you know, not the best student.
So I gotta ask you a question.
Yeah.
How did you get put on to that? Because so many people are, you know, trying to get into the hip hop and touring with Wiz Khalifa and all these people, and you had dinner with Nas, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
oh man.
Like,
forgot about that.
How did this kid from Boston, no family in America,
right?
Like, you know, nobody in the music business that you knew.
Nobody.
You know what I'm saying? How do you come to New York where everybody wants, and especially at this time, that time,
yeah,
everybody wanted to be a rapper or an artist, you know what I'm saying? Like, tell me, like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
You know?
I think
kid from talking, performing in the lunchroom to performing, touring in the weekends.
Yeah. I think all entrepreneurs, like, we have to be a little bit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say a little bit crazy, I mean really crazy. Like, you got to be crazy. And I think for me, like, that hunger and that drive and, like, that need to live my dream, like, to really do it, like, it was just too big for me to not figure it out. Like, I would just constantly be connecting dots, meeting people, figuring out how I could provide something that I was doing to help them out, mm-hmm. you know, to help get into a room or to have a conversation. And I think I just learned how to, like, sell. You know, like, I learned how to sell certain things at the right time. And I just didn't stop. Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't quit. And I would stay, you know, I would stay up nights late figuring it out, doing my research,
mm-hmm.
you know, just trying to figure out how to connect dots. Like, I was obsessed with, like, the idea of figuring it out, you know, not
like
so much obsessed
word.
With fame or with, you know, with the money or whatever, but just, like, the need to figure it out.
When's your birthday?
I'm an Aries. I'm in April.
Oh, April, baby.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a Scorpio. I was just curious because you sound like me, you know? Like,
that's why we're here.
That's why we're here. Faith Grinds Fire, right?
Right.
So, but the thing is, it's funny. It's, you said something, a word that I use, obsessed,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I think to really be successful at anything that you do, you have to be obsessed with
Absolutely.
It. And obsessed, you know, because people use this word obsessed as like a bad thing. Oh my gosh, you obsessed with this person. Nah, bro. Like, if you're not obsessed with your career, if you're not obsessed with your dream, who the hell else is going to be obsessed for you?
Yep.
Nobody. You see what I'm saying? Like, do you think I'm going to push hard to get you to be a rapper? No.
Right.
Like, you have to do it.
Right.
Like, do you think you're going to push hard for me to be a great podcaster or entrepreneur? No.
Right.
I have to. You see what I'm saying? So if you don't have that passion, you don't have that drive, you don't have that ambition, you see what I'm saying? Like, that determination. You know what I mean? Like, my parents, when I started real estate, they weren't, like, thrilled. I wanted to go to school out of state.
Mm-hmm.
I had full scholarships.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't let me go. But I was so obsessed with figuring it out.
Right.
I said, you know what? I'm going to go not just get a job. I went and got an opportunity that was commission only.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
So you had
because
to
I
eat.
Wanted to figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't like 9-to-5 jobs. And just like you said, like, it's interesting that we have similar stories. Like, in the wintertime, my father's business is it's outdoors. So he worked, like, wood preservation. That's his business.
Interesting.
And so in the wintertime, if it's snowing, if it's raining, he's at home.
Out of work.
So out of work.
Yeah.
So every winter, we dealt with the same thing.
Mm.
It wasn't someone in an office telling my father he couldn't make money for his family.
Right.
It was Mother Nature.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So I at a young age, similar, like 10, 11, I was like, yo, this won't be me.
Right.
Like, and I must figure out, and I saw my father wake up every day. My father's my hero.
Mm-hmm.
My father would wake up every day at 4:00 in the morning and he'll come home at 8, 9 o'clock at night, and he'll come and he'll prepare his work for the next day,
right?
And then he'll do it again,
right?
And I was like, yo, and he's like 70 something years old, or you know, whatever, and he's just about to retire,
mm-hmm.
and he's still like, he's crying because he doesn't want to retire,
right?
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's some people like that. Yeah,
some people. I don't think I want to retire either. Right. I'm a grinder, man. Like even though like I, you know, my friends would say, oh, I feel like you're retired now, you know, and I'm like, because you're just doing everything that you love
to do. Yeah,
and I'm
yeah.
just like, yo, this is life.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like for me, retirement is really doing what you love to do right. every day. Right.
I agree.
So if you working at a job that you hate, of course you're going to love retirement. But if you doing something that you love, like that's why Jay-Z was like, yo, I'm retiring. And then next thing you know, he dropped 10 albums. Like, you know what I mean? Like a lot of people. But if you, like even Joe Buttons, shout out to Joe Buttons. Like Joe Buttons retired from rap.
Right.
But he's still relevant because he never retired. He retired from rap, but he went into his passion, which was always been like
the
entertainment and the
yeah.
culture.
Yeah.
So that's what he's doing. So technically, to me, he's not retired.
No, I agree with that.
You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
You just move.
Yeah, for me, like, I have this thing where I don't believe in work-life balance. Like,
yeah.
You know, people are like, oh, work-life
yeah,
balance.
Yeah, nah, man.
I don't even look at what I do as work per se, or because it, you know, it's like every day is you're doing exactly what you want to be doing. And I think if you're able to hit that pace early,
mm-hmm.
then it never feels like work.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah, we work hard. Like, there are days where you take L's and you're like, man, I can't do this no
yeah.
more. But, you know, it's just all part of like the journey, and
yeah.
and I don't mind that.
Like, majority of times I don't really prep for interviews, and I like really white slates, so I don't really research people.
Interesting,
right? And I do this on purpose because I don't like calling this an interview.
Right.
I wanted it to be a conversation, and I want the listeners to actually like if you come to my office, this is exactly how it's gonna be.
Right.
No cameras. But it'll just be me and you, and we'll chop it up for hours, right?
Right.
And we're building, and we leave empowered, we leave inspired, right? So I decided to take this podcast and do the same thing.
Mm.
But the only difference is now thousands of people are listening,
right?
Right.
Right.
So here's the thing. But I did research on you, and I went on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and I watched this interview that you had. I mean, not interview. You did a TED Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And, bro,
thank you.
I have to give you a head shake, man.
I appreciate you.
Man,
thank you.
Your story was like, I'm going to let you talk about it.
Yeah.
But like being with that condition, you know, and having going through that and still thriving, still traveling and hearing you traveling on the weekends, going to school
yeah.
by yourself.
Yeah.
Like, bro,
I've been through it.
I've
been
through it, man.
Yeah, I've been through it.
You know what I'm saying? So tell them.
I mean, yeah, that the TED Talk was interesting because it was like the first time that I had to like synthesize my whole story and,
mm-hmm.
and for myself to even internalize it and look at what I had done and kind of reflect on it. Like while I was preparing for that, I was like, this is kind of crazy. Like I didn't even realize because I was just living in it. but yeah, I think to speak to what you were talking about earlier too, like my drive has always been like this different gear because, you know, since I was born, I had a kidney condition, and it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't something we didn't know about. Like, you know, my family was all trying to take care of it, but there's only so much you can do. And, my whole life, I knew that if I ever got cut off short, you know, due to a medical condition or whatever, like if my life ever got cut off short, that I would do everything that I wanted to do like that, whatever my last day would be the, up until that day, I would have like no regrets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of like, it's a cliche thing to say, like everyone wants to say no regrets and know that, but like, I literally went up and did that. Like I put numbers on the board every day so that if anything, God forbid, ever happened, I was like, all right, cool, I'm good. And so when I actually, so the summer of 2012 was an interesting year because my career as an artist was kind of like all coming together.
Mm-hmm.
So the December before that, I was in Japan on tour. Came back, and then 2 weeks later, I went to India on tour. Came back, a month later, I went to Barbados on tour. Like, I was really moving, and I was like, oh, wow, like, this is all coming together. And then I'm about to go to India, and I'm about to go to Europe in like, the third quarter, and I have a checkup with my doctor. And, you know, it was, like, typical. Like, he's taking long to come out. Like, it's two, I'm checking my watch, like, what's going on? And he comes out, he's like, hey, look, like, we just got the numbers back, whatever, like, you have, you're in the end stage of kidney failure. And end stage is basically like you have about 1 to 3 months left of your body being able to survive off the existing kidney before you need to go on dialysis or you need to get a transplant. And I'm 24 at the time. And so for me, like, hearing that, I was like, what? You know what I mean? Like, what you mean I have 3 months? Like, that, you know, it was a lot to deal with. And I was supposed to go to India for, like, this dream tour thing that I was doing in, like, a week. And he was like, don't go anywhere. You know, you need to focus. Like, you need to figure out what you're going to do. And I was like, I'm going to go. Like, I'll figure it out when I get back. And
how long was the tour for?
It was 6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was grueling. Because touring overseas is always grueling.
It's always grueling, yeah.
And I could feel my body breaking down while I was on tour. And I was like, oh, man, this is, you know, this is crazy. Long story short, I came back. You know, obviously, like, I couldn't keep up. Like, my body couldn't keep up no more, just scientifically. And I ended up going on dialysis. Like, it was like a, you know, emergency dialysis thing a couple months later. And for me, it was like, I'm 24. I literally was about to do everything I ever dreamed of. And to have it cut short, just cut off, that was really difficult. You know, and I remember, you know, that time, like, I didn't know when I was going to get back on my feet. I didn't know if I was going to make music again. You know, I didn't know if I would be able to move like that again. Like, I just had no idea. And, you know, by the grace of God, like, my dad was my kidney donor. He gave me a live kidney, and, you know, I was able to recover, like, 3 to 6 months later. I'm making the story super short that 3 to 6 month period was hell, but, you know, we went through it. And I look at that experience now, like, that's probably my worst fear. You know, that, you know, I have a couple others related to my family, but that's probably one of my worst fears. And who I am now today, I think it's, I play with an unfair advantage because I don't have any fear because I already been through it. You know what I mean? So when people are like, oh, aren't you scared of your property not stabilizing or your client doing, I'm like, property and clients, like, I'm not worried about all that. Like, I've been through it. You know what I mean? Like, I went through the real fire. And
I
so
almost died.
Yeah. Like, I paid the ultimate price.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you know, I saw what that did to my family. Like, it was a lot. So now, as an entrepreneur, whatever it is, like, I feel like I got a cheat code because fear to me is so relative, right? It's so subjective. And I don't have any real fear other than the things that I've already kind of gone through.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, man. You know, I'm about to hit 6 years in January of being, you know, healthy and having a transplant. And
so how do you feel today?
I feel amazing.
Feel amazing. Yeah. You look amazing.
Thank
man.
You, man. Like, I you feel know, great.
So you get past the fear, right? Do you ever have any regrets? No, right?
Yeah. It's this weird thing.
I have this saying on in my wall in my office. It says regret is worse than fear. Right?
Nah, I would agree 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, and you just think about it, you know, like, the doctor, matter of fact, let me ask you a question. Do you regret not listening to the doctor or do you, no, right?
No, I don't because, okay. not to cut you off, but just, because
no.
I remember that experience while I was, you know, on tour and doing all that and that was what I had wanted to do since I was in high school, since the lunchroom thing. You know what I mean? So, like, for me, I closed the loop, you know, for myself. Like, I closed that loop. And back when I was 24, like, I had no money, like, keeping it real. Like, I had no money. So, for me, even figuring out a way to go see my family in India was such an important thing for me. So, if I was able to do that off of music and off of the things that I had built with my own hands, like, that was beautiful for me. So yeah, no regrets. My doctor definitely thinks I'm crazy, but, you know, he saved my life, so I have a lot of respect for him.
So what's your purpose? What's your drive? Like, what, like, you know what I mean? Like, what what moves you?
That's a great question. I think, like, my drive, there's kind of three pillars that I attach to that. I mean, the first thing is to be, like, the best reflection of God that I can be, you know what I mean? And be the best reflection of that spirit so that when other people see me, they're like, why does he move like that? And it's not because I got money or because I got a crib or because I do this or I drive this. It's because I want to be a reflection of, you know, like, the creator. The second thing is to honor my family, you know, simply put. Like, if you had to pick up everything you have now and go move to another country, I don't know if you're doing that. I don't know if I'm doing that, right? Yeah. Like, I'm good. Like, I don't want to move. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when my parents did something like that, like, to me, it's just still, like, you know, it's so crazy. And then, obviously, you know, my dad, you know, my parents, like, they brought me to life twice. Like, that's what I say. Like, y'all brought me into this world, and then y'all brought me into the world again.
Again.
Right?
Yeah.
So definitely not out of my family. And the third pillar that I stand on is to pay it forward for other people that look like me and that kind of are in a similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's so many, you know, immigrant kids, like black and brown kids, that have no reference point mm-hmm. for what this looks like. And I want to be like that, you know, that resource and that reference point to be like, yo, if I could do it, here's everything I know. Now go do it. Yeah, those are the things that drive me.
Yeah. Okay. Because you tend to have like which really, like, when I check out your Instagram page and I check out, you know, different things about you.
Yeah.
You know, there's no fluff. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, and I'm That's sort funny. Of the same way. Well, I am the same way.
Yeah.
Because I'm a no fluff person. I'm really transparent, and it offends people. Like with Scorpios, it's either you love us, you hate us. There's no in between.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean? Like, so because we say things that everyone thinks, but no one says.
Mm.
So it's hard to be around a Scorpio because we say what we feel. And we say what the truth is, but you might not want to hear the truth.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You're going to hear it.
You're going to hear it.
Yeah.
Because it just has to get out my system. You know what I mean? And I'm going to say it in front of you, not behind you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so that's why, like, you know, my circle of friends is, like, really small.
Likewise.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? And if you're not a grinder, you can't be around me. Like, I had friends that were my partners, and I don't work with them anymore because, you know, we just different. You see what I'm saying? Like, I want to work 1 million hours a day. You want to party 1 million hours a day. Like, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, shout out to my current team. But, you know, everyone around me wants to work. Everybody around me is a grinder. You know, I could text Brianna at 2 o'clock in the morning and she's texting me at 2:03.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I could text Taylor at 1 o'clock in the morning about a proposal and she's texting me back.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So these are the things that I like. Not, oh my God, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing? Bye. Talk to you tomorrow. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So tell me about this no fluff. Do you feel that way, the no fluff attitude?
For sure.
And how you feel about working with friends and, you know what I'm saying? Like, or partners. Like, who's your partners? Like, how do you do that?
Those are great questions, man. I think the first one on no fluff, I mean, we live in an era of fluff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's
the
so
highlight reel.
Yes, imaginary players. You know what I mean? Like, Where the Hummer at? Like, nobody really got it like that, but everyone wants to show it off. And, you know, I think for me, like, and similar for you too, like, we grew up in an era where you had to be validated by somebody who had been through it. Or,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, there was a set of rules back then. Like, you know, everybody that kind of helped me and mentor me or position me and the people that, you know, like, I hustled with, like, everybody could vouch for me. And that's how we came up. Like, we had to win the respect and earn respect from people. And nowadays it's just different. You know, like, the internet makes everything different. Communication is different. Like, the way people are coming up now is different. And I'm not like one of those, you know, old man yelling at the clouds. Like, I'm not like, you know, Tekashi, I don't care. You get your money, do it how you do it. But that's not how I came up. So when we talk about fluff, like, for me, like, the people who are really good at what they do can always see through the fluff.
Absolutely.
And for me, like, I'd rather have it take longer and, mm-hmm. and be the slow cook, but be the real thing, you know, and get to that point. And the people who really do it, like, for real, be like, nah, he's one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, you know, that's just the way I was raised and that's just the way I do it. There are a lot of things, a lot of opportunities that come to me that I'm like, nah, I don't want to do that because it doesn't really, you know, stand for what I am. And a quick check, like, we've seen it too many times in history, like, a quick check is just a quick check. And you know, if you can kind of, like, create a level of excellence around you, mm-hmm. you know, and that you don't need to ever do that, that's really what that's what I work towards. In terms of working with friends, it's funny you were talking about it. I mean, I've had the same thing, you know, people that I was really close to, that we built something together. But when it came down to doing it for real, like, when it went from a hobby to a job,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, when it came to locking in, like, they just weren't built like that.
Yeah.
And you know, the only thing I regret from that, those situations is that it did affect our personal relationship a little bit, you know, and it's tough, man. Money gets involved. Male ego gets involved. Mm-hmm. Like, those things are real. And,
no, it's true, man.
You know, I've been trying to patch those relationships up in my life, you know, from kind of like past endeavors. But in terms of like the team that I have now, man, I'm super, super lucky. Like, when you see, you know, the Instagram or whatever, you like, those are, you know, people help. Like, I have people helping me curate, like, the aesthetically. And obviously, I'm doing a lot of the narrative and I'm speaking from where I'm coming from. But, you know, I have people helping me. And that's the only reason we've been able to get to this place. I run an agency called Green Room Creative, and we have a staff of 8. You know, and there's no agency without the team, right? So, like, I'm only as good as the people that, you know, are around me. You know, real estate operations, same thing. You know, like, everybody has a job, and you got to do your job. And
now, the people that work with you in the agency, right, like, describe them. Like, are they
– Yeah.
Do you have to tell them what to do? Do you have to – are they – and you know, if you weren't – like, you're here right now.
Right.
Are they still – are they like, oh, he's out – you know – he's not here, so let's party, or are they grinding?
No, they're working. They because, you know, I think ultimately the goal for me as a leader, too, is to empower people to, like, you got to, like, you have that goal that you're trying to work at. The agency may be that goal, or it may not be.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, like, I want to help you get to that point. I can't motivate you. I tell people all the time, I'm not here to motivate you. You got to bring your own motivation, but I can guide you, and I can give you that, you know, give you that the spark. So yeah, my team, they're creative people. They're hungry. I think they all have a story, you know, like they all come from backgrounds where they had to really like prove themselves. Yeah, and they're not, you know, like, we don't have like the silver spoon types as much, just because like that's not how we operate. You know, we're scrappy. We're young, and again, figuring it out, right? Like, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, no, I love it, man. And having a leader that has no fear helps out a lot.
maybe, hopefully.
You would have to ask them,
but
it
hopefully.
Does, you know, because you know what? It helps them. You know, even if they don't say anything to you, I think sometimes people, when they see that you would jump out and do something that's uncomfortable, that they would consider uncomfortable, the next time they are faced with that same situation, they're going to, like, you know what? Gene would do that.
Right.
I'm going to do it.
Right.
You know? And so they take action. And when they take action, they're like, yo.
I just did that. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they might, you know, it's like a thankless job. You know what I mean? Like, being an entrepreneur is, it's like.
It's not glamorous.
It's not glamorous, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, plenty of times it's, you know, it's rough. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I know sometimes you're a full-time entrepreneur, right?
Full-time.
So, like, not every month is great. You know, not every month you have clients. You know, sometimes you might have clients that you do work for, and then next thing you know, they're like, I'm not paying you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean,
and you have to go after them. But the thing is, it's just like, you know, so you have bills, you have office rent, you have staff, you have all these things that, you know, like, I'll tell you an interesting story. So me and my wife, we opened up a frozen yogurt shop in Brooklyn, right?
Okay.
It was called Brooklyn Swirl. And it was the first frozen yogurt shop in Bed-Stuy.
Okay.
Right? On Marcus Garvey and McDonough.
Okay.
Right in the corner.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You know where Peaches is?
Of course.
So I'm right down the block from Peaches. Right in the corner.
I used to live right around there.
You did?
Bushwick and Halsey.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So right on Marcus Garvey, and, there's a club called, not club, but a little lounge called Brown Sugar.
Yeah.
Like,
I know that block super well.
So I'm on the corner.
Yeah.
And ACA, my agency, is in the middle of the block.
Copy. Okay.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at.
Copy.
So my wife got pregnant, super excited. I was like, you know what? I'm getting a boy. So I was like, as men, we make promises. And so I said, if you have a boy, I swear that I am going to close my business for the wintertime, right?
Okay.
So we're going to switch things up so I thought I was going to reopen in May, April, right? So I get, you know, my son was due February 5th. He came February 4th.
Okay.
And so when he came, you know, he came, I was like, all right, cool. We're going to open back up. Wrong. I get a letter in the mail. You know, we get all these letters all over the place. We had like 15, 16 violations, right? They hit Landmark. So Landmark Preservation is this organization, you know, like this organization that's part of a department that's like part of the city.
Okay.
And they preserve blocks, you know, like the brown signs.
Yeah, like historic.
Historical districts, yeah, yeah. Right? So out of nowhere, they were like, oh, this is called Stuyvesant Heights. You have to bring it back to 1972. So I was like, you know what? Let me call some of the politicians I know.
Right.
Let me get this.
What's
really going on? Let me get rid of it. We'll be opening back up. Right. No problem. So I put a sign up, and I was just like, it's okay. My wife was like, I'm worried. You know, I was like, call some people up.
Right, we'll figure it out.
They're like, this is a real problem. So I was like, let me call somebody else. Call them. Nope. Set up a meeting with the councilman for our district and the commissioner of Landmark. I set that meeting up. The commissioner was basically like, no one could do anything. You have to take care of this. So it's been 2 years I've been fighting with them, with my wife and I.
For real?
Yes. 2 years.
Your shop is still...
still closed.
Closed?
Yes.
You paying rent?
Yeah, we have to.
I mean,
But the thing is, it's like...
Wow.
Yes, yes. And
you actively fighting it? Like, you taking care?
Yo, bro, we pay architects. Every time we had Landmark come to the building, we're setting up. We have the architects do what they want us to do.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, they deny it. They're like, we actually want to see inside of here now. We're like, but why didn't you ask for that the first time? You know? And so back and forth. 2 year fight. And I'm telling you this because here's the thing, right? And like I said, I'm transparent.
Yeah.
When you're an entrepreneur, you never know what's going to hit you.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Like, right. I didn't know that when my wife gave birth and this business that we were building for the legacy play was going to shut down.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know that my mother-in-law was going to get terminally ill. Like, we didn't know that. We didn't know that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't know that my partners that we built a 10-year business with were not going to be my partners anymore. Like, you see what I'm saying? But the thing is, you got to keep going.
Yeah.
You have to keep going. You have to keep going no matter what. You see what I'm saying? Because if you understand your purpose, if you understand your drive, if you understand, like, the thing about that I loved about you was the fact that even though with the kidney and the health issues and the warnings, you still went after your dream and you still went after the pursuit of the grind that you wanted.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And you didn't make an excuse from it. You know what I mean? And a lot of times people, regardless of what it is, it might be they got fired from work. Oh man, my life is over.
Right.
No.
Right.
No.
Right.
Don't let some cornball behind a desk that just signed a piece of paper that got an email from corporate that's saying we have to let go of 5 people and you just happen to be the person because you didn't give them coffee that week. So you're gone.
Right.
They don't care about your family. The only person that's going to care about your family, bro, is you.
Facts.
You see what I'm saying? Like, you Facts. Have to worry about you. Landmark don't give a crap about me and my wife and my legacy. They don't give a shit.
They
you see
don't.
What I'm saying?
Right.
Like, they don't give a shit. They didn't give a shit about Brooklyn Swirl. They don't care about Bed-Stuy. They don't care. They didn't care about Bed-Stuy. They didn't care about Brooklyn until Brooklyn was hot. You know what I'm saying? Because the people who in 1972, when they landmarked that community, right? In 1980, the same people that were there in 1972 were the same people that renovated a building. But now in 2014, 2015,
they want to act.
They want to come brand new. Like, oh, you guys have to make the changes. You see what I'm saying?
When you open it back up,
I'm trying. Like, I'm still fighting.
That's crazy.
So hopefully, like, we just submitted again. We just submitted a new architectural drawings again. Another check again.
I was going to say, I know them. Those aren't cheap.
No, man. You're talking about $3,700, $3,800, $4,500, $5,000. Like,
every time.
Every time. Yeah. And so, and they're not, they don't care.
No.
No one cares.
No, yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing, too, I want to put out to entrepreneurs. Nobody cares. Even if you're listening to this little story that I'm telling you, they don't care. They don't care.
I care because
you care because you're an entrepreneur.
Because I
hear entrepreneurs, you. I'm telling you these stories because I want the people listening
Facts.
To hear our stories
right.
and hear and say, yo, whatever I'm going through, I can get through it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, your partner leaves you, screw it. It's not their, it wasn't their vision, it was yours. You see what I'm saying? Let them, you'll be good.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I had people tell me that were like close to me that were, if when I leave this business, it's going to fold.
Right.
I'm like, yo, you know who I am?
Make Hov say, okay, so
yeah.
make another Hov.
Make another Hov. Make another Gene. Go ahead. Right. Go ahead. Like, right. try to duplicate me. You right. can't.
Right.
You can't. You can't outwork me. You see what I'm saying? You can't. There's no way. You know why? Because my parents, my mom left me in Haiti with my dad and her sister for 5-6 years.
That's, yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, how can I?
How could you not?
Yeah. Not make it.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? My mom worked 2-3 jobs for me to go to private school. You know what I mean? And then she had this notion that, you know, you go to Long Island, you don't need to go to private school. So we went to public school in Long Island. You know what I mean? But instead of paying school, now I went from paying school to paying a mortgage.
Nah, paying taxes. Yeah.
And paying taxes.
Yep.
So that was a sacrifice. Now I went from 2 jobs in the city, now 2 jobs in Long Island.
Crazy.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Taking public transportation. And mind you, you got to think about it. Our parents didn't speak English. You see what I'm saying? Now, here's the cool part, right? I mean, this is the part that, you know, the billboard that I want to talk about. This is what I was building up.
Yeah. Bring it in.
You put out this billboard, right?
Yeah.
Tell the people what the billboard says.
Yeah. So the billboard campaign was it was a campaign that we architected for an artist and a friend of mine named Anik Khan. Anik is he's Bangladeshi born.
Mm-hmm.
He's a MC. He's a singer. He's an entrepreneur himself. He is like Ebro loves him. Ebro be pushing him like Zane
on Hot 97. Uh-huh.
Yeah, like Anik has really been cooking, and we got introduced through mutual friends maybe like 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just a lot of similarities. Like, you know, we both are have very family focused, you know, like perspective, and we do a lot for the people around us, and so we automatically clicked. And you know, we've been working on this record with him for the last couple months, and I wanted it to be big. You know, and I knew that the record wasn't going to move via traditional means because music is different and culture is different now. Mm-hmm. And him being an artist and his story, like, it needed to be told on a different level, a different medium, a different angle. And so we decided to go with this pretty radical out-of-home strategy. We did a billboard in Astoria, Queens, which is just in big letters on Steinway on Astoria Boulevard. It says, "Damn, it feels good to be an immigrant."
Say that again.
"Damn, it feels good to be an immigrant." And it has a quote from him, and that's it. And a logo from, you know, one of our partners, and that's it.
I know. I saw it.
No stream now or listen here or watch this. Just, you know, just talking about the message. And then we did one in Times Square.
Wow. I didn't know about that one.
50th and 8th.
Where?
50th and 7th. It's even bigger.
Now, how? He said it's even bigger.
It's even bigger.
Now, how does that? What does that mean, though?
I almost cried because for me, like, and you could relate too, like, you know, you said your parents didn't speak English, mm-hmm. and like all those things that we went through as kids, getting ridiculed for certain things, mm-hmm. or just feeling like left out because we didn't have, you know, skin complexion was different or our stories were different. This moment to be able to sit in Times Square and be like, yeah, that's ours right there. And it says, "Damn, it feels good to be an immigrant." That's a full circle moment, you know, like that's really closing the loop. It's just like showing people again, like you gotta embrace the things that do make you who you are,
mm-hmm.
instead of always worrying about what you don't have.
Exactly.
And finding a way to, again, be the light for other people. You know, like I think I mentioned, like, one of my pillars is basically to show other people that you could do it too. And if we could do that, like, that had to go through a lot of loops and hoops to end up there. That wasn't just something that we were like, yeah, all right, let's run it. You know, but like that's how strongly we believed in it. And I know personally, because I've been watching the whole campaign unfold, like, there's been a lot of people have been touched by this. You know, Anik brought his parents to Times Square a couple weeks ago to take a look at it for the first time. And, you know, it's just a moment. So.
They were emotional?
Hell yeah. A lot of tears.
A lot of tears.
Yeah. And
did you show your parents?
I show my parents on FaceTime. Yeah. My mom is posting about it on Facebook. Like, yo, my son did this.
Yeah, that's what's up.
Yeah, man. Again, it's like something that
too.
I appreciate you, man. It's something that we were never proud of when we should have been.
Yeah,
you know, like our countries and our people have the most flavor.
Mm-hmm.
We got style. We got crazy. You know, like we like. America is unseasoned without us, like keeping it a buck, right?
Yeah.
Like we brought that to this country. So why not be, you know, why not be proud of it?
Yeah. No, you're right, man. Bro, I appreciate you, man.
Thank you, man.
Like, so is there any like advice that you would like to share to upcoming entrepreneurs or even entrepreneurs that you see on that wanna start a business now?
Yeah. My favorite thing, and I had to learn this the hard way. But it's to be built for the long game. Like, position yourself for the long game. Don't be in it for a check. Don't be in it for 3 to 5 years or whatever. Like, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, it's going to be a lifelong thing. And there is no finish line. There's no end. You just got to be in it until you're not on earth no more, really. So that's my only advice is play to win, but you got to play over the long term.
What's your superpower?
Man, ideas.
Mm.
Yeah. That's the only reason that I'm where I am is because I'll be having some ideas. So
that's your superpower.
Yeah. And I've been blessed, man. Like that, you know, that's what I got. And
that's cool.
That's what I use.
You got to use what God gives you. You know
Facts.
What I'm saying? Like if you don't use what God gives you, man, then
you're doing a disservice.
You're doing a disservice. You're not fulfilling your vision.
Yeah.
And you're fulfilling the vision that God put in you. You know what I mean?
I agree.
And your purpose. You know, so it seems like you have a lot of self-awareness. You have, you know, I love the fact that you're fearless, you know what I mean? And I'm glad that you're here, you know, and
Thank
I'm
you.
Glad that your father was able to be the one to help you and
yeah.
give you a second chance of life. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? That's amazing. A lot of people don't have that opportunity. But thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Tell
man.
The people where they can find you. Share your Instagram page. Share your
I'm easy to find. It's at Ani Hustles on everything. AniHustels.
Mm-hmm.
Everything spelled regular. I do a weekly Q&A with entrepreneurs on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I run a monthly consulting course. You can find me. You know, stop by my office if you wanna. If you got an idea you wanna talk about. But yeah, Ani Hustles on everything.
Okay, cool, man. So. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Faith Grind Inspire with your host. I am your host, Gene Alert. You can find me on Instagram at Mr. Alert. You can check out our website, which is faithgrindinspire.com. Shout out to the OG Podcast Network. Shout out to our producers, Tim and Jamie. Shout out to Brianna. Shout out to Jennifer in the building. Shout out to Taylor, the whole crew. Shout out to Ani for coming through. And, you know, hope you guys found a lot of value out this episode. And, you know, share with your friends. Share this episode. You know, that's the only way we're going to get the word out and help other entrepreneurs thrive. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially in this day and age, like, entrepreneurship is the key to success. Like, the key to unlocking real wealth for your families. You know what I'm saying? Everybody did it. You know, it's our turn. You know, and I love the fact that Ani shared that. It feels great to be a immigrant. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
It's the best. Like, this is our time. And be proud of who you are. Be proud of your family. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't care about what media narratives are out there. Like, be true to yourself. Be self-aware. So, Faith, God, Inspire. Continue to shine. God bless. Peace.